today. Hello. Hi, how are you? Oh, that's, oh, yeah. June 9th, 2021. This is episode number 548, the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, a super humdinger. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot me a note at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you straight to our Facebook group. And today it is my pleasure, my absolute pleasure, to introduce you to a new fellow. I really think you're going to want to keep your eye on a young man named Jeff Gamet.
Hi, everyone. I'm so happy to be here today. What a beautiful audience. By the way, episode 548, isn't that coincidentally the security number from the back of your credit card?
Yes, it is.
Amazing.
It's also the password that I use for all my websites.
What a coincidence. We must use the same websites.
Well, we will be now.
Yep.
Make sure you use long, unique, and complex passwords, everybody, and use a password manager. I personally enjoy 1Password.
As do I. Brian, yeah. when I did my off-the-cuff response to your introduction, and I'm doing the whole hiya part, I was actually waving and looking around as if there was an audience here.
As you do.
Yeah.
As you do. And in our minds, there is, in fact, an audience. In our minds, people listen to the show. So we clearly have excellent imaginations.
Totally. Yep.
In our minds, we have interns somewhere.
Wait, they're not real?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Oh, that explains why the FBI showed up at my house the other day.
That is so dark. That is so... Who lets us on the air? God.
You know, I have family members that ask the same thing. They're like, seriously, people let you on shows?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Got a question for you.
Okay.
Did you watch 1971 on Apple?
Not yet.
Apple TV Plus, I should say.
I've just been busy, and by busy, I mean I was binging the last season of Castlevania. So now that I'm done binging that, I can go watch 1971, but I really want to see it.
Fantastic, man. 8-part series for those who somehow don't know. I actually came to it late. It was released. All 8 episodes were released on May 21st, I believe, and it's June 9th as we record this. Probably sometime in July by the time it gets actually posted. And 8 episodes that looks at the music and the politics and the culture of 1971, and talks about how each was influencing the other. And the changes that were happening. The premise is that this is the year where music changed everything. Whatever. I think every year, especially through the 70s and late 60s, that's probably the case. Maybe mid 60s through the 70s, that was probably the case. And they just arbitrarily picked 1971 as the most important one. But regardless, they did a fantastic job. It's an adaptation from a book. I forget the author's name of the book. But it is, there's a lot of footage that I personally had never seen before. And I've been steeped in the late 60s and 70s for, you know, certainly all my adult life and my teenage life as well. Good stuff. Really good stuff.
All right. Well, it's been on my list of, I need to watch this soon. And now that I have finished Castlevania, yeah. All right. I'll start watching 1971.
Yeah. Good stuff. I look forward to hearing what you think. One of the interesting aspects of it is that while there are a couple of newer interviews with people, like for instance, Jimmy Iovine, formerly of Apple, was there's some interviews with him that I think are relatively recent, but all of the video footage is period from 1971.
Cool. By the way, I loved that you identified Jimmy Iovine as the guy formerly from Apple.
As, you know, as opposed to his very long and extensive musical resume.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's how I roll sometimes. Anyway, good show. I look forward to hearing what you think. If anyone out there has watched it and has some thoughts, I'd love to hear them. You can definitely write me at acm@macobserver.com. I'd love to hear what you think, or post something on our Facebook group. Really, really, really good stuff. And it is certainly not all of the music. For instance, they don't talk a lot about country. They say almost nothing about classical music or and very, very little, but some about jazz. There is some Miles Davis stuff, but, they definitely look at lots of different genres within the pop, rock, soul, R&B, genres at the time. And they look at both sides of the Atlantic in terms of, you know, the only two countries that matter, the US and England. Right. Oh, no, but you know what? Actually, they go to Jamaica too. To be fair, it is not all just the US.
So all three countries.
All three countries, right. Anyway, good, really, really good stuff. Excited about it.
Hey, as long as we're throwing out entertainment stuff.
Sure.
I'm going to toss out a book that I actually read in a reasonable amount of time and finished.
So what, 3 years?
No, it was like 3 weeks.
Wow.
I know.
Who are you? And I know. What did you do with Jeff Gamet?
We have him in a stasis pod, and we'll bring him back out in 1,000 years when people will actually value his opinions. And I totally love the book. I don't think you will, only because you didn't like his previous works, and it's The Hail Mary Project by Andy Weir. And you weren't a fan of The Martian.
I was not a fan of The Martian. You're correct.
So you won't enjoy The Hail Mary Project, because it's in that same vein where it's the lone astronaut. And
that wasn't my problem with The Martian. My problem was with the storytelling, the style, his writing.
It's the same style.
I try not to crap talk writers, since I'm trying to be a writer, but
it's Andy Weir. You don't like his writing style, therefore I don't think you like this book.
Okay.
Either, but for everyone else, it's not Brian. It was a great book. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Turns out, by the way, that's most people.
So most people will enjoy this book.
All right. Cool.
And seriously, if I burned through it in 3 weeks, and I know most people like burned through it in 3 weeks, but Brian, since you know me, you get what that really means.
I do. Yeah, that's that. I've given you books 15 years ago that I don't think you finished, but you are actually reading.
Yeah. Yes. This is actually true. Yeah. So for everyone that's like, do you really read that slow, Jeff? Well, no, but I'll read multiple books concurrently. And I say concurrently instead of at the same time, because I'll read a part of a book and then I move on to a different book and then a different book and then a different book. And then at some point I get back to that first book but I'll add other books in along the way. I probably should see a therapist about this.
My then girlfriend and I bought you the first Song of Ice and Fire book, Game of Thrones.
I'm almost done with it.
We then got married and divorced and have spent more than 10 years, like 12 years divorced.
And I'm almost done with it. Almost done with it.
Shout out to Darla.
Yeah. And then hey, Darla.
It was a couple years later, I think, I bought you Hyperion.
Yes. And I have started it.
I'm reading another book by Dan Simmons, by the way, came out, I think probably 10 years ago, called The Abominable, which is, you know how he likes to, maybe you don't know this, but he likes to tell stories that are set in the past with real people as characters.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And this one is looking at the an ascent of Mount Everest in 1925. But he's got this foreword where he basically tells the story about how the manuscript that is the book was actually written by one of the characters in the story, which is a fiction. Anyway, I just thought I'd share.
Awesome.
Just started it. I'm enjoying it. And I will finish it before you finish any other books.
Yes, this checks out.
Okay, so this week, Apple did, by the way, my sponsor this week is LinkedIn Jobs. I'm going to tell you about them a little later in the show. And in the meanwhile, Apple did that whole Worldwide Developer Conference. Actually, it's still going.
Which is surprising considering how long the intro to this show ran. You'd think that they'd be done with the conference by now.
You'd think so. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You'd think so. Yeah. But you're going to give me the giggles. Apple, here's the very first thing. Were you surprised by the lack of new hardware?
No.
Why?
I was not surprised because even though we've seen hardware at quite a few WWDC keynotes.
Most, if not it's always all, a crap. For the last several years.
Yeah, but it's still a crapshoot because historically that's not been the place for big hardware announcements.
I reject that. There were some WWDCs where there was no new hardware announced. There were some. Mm-hmm. But there have been many, if not more, where some new hardware was announced.
All right. So one of the three listeners probably has a spreadsheet and they'll let us know what the percentage is, which would be great. But
yeah, we could have done that. We could have put that together ourselves, but that's not how we roll.
No. But the point is, you don't know if there's going to be a hardware announcement at a WWDC, even though there have been many where that's happened. Okay, so set that part aside and
I just wanted the new big iMac. That was why I was hoping. That's the only thing really hoping for. New iMac, a brand new iMac or a 16-inch MacBook Pro. But go ahead.
They gave you the new iMac a few weeks ago.
They gave me a small iMac a few weeks ago.
Yes.
I need a big one.
But they gave you a new iMac. They didn't give you the iMac you want. Mm.
I've been taking notes from my buddy John Keat. And there have been no iMacs announced that are worth anything whatsoever because I'm not interested in them.
Well, Apple's clearly doomed. They've given us some hardware announcements fairly recently, including a new iMac that's irrelevant because it's not John Keats' iMac just a few weeks ago.
But no iMac is John Keats' iMac. But go ahead. Anyway, please go ahead.
So, see, Apple is doomed. All right. And while everyone was really hoping for a new 16-inch M1 MacBook Pro at this event, I would have actually been kind of surprised if it happened. And that's because I don't think the processors that Apple wants to use are actually there yet. And
that may well be true.
I'm
sorry. Go ahead, please.
I think what's holding Apple back from releasing the new M1 16-incher is that it can't be the M1.
Correct.
That's out right now. There's not enough IO buses.
Yeah, it's going to be an M2 anyway, or it won't be the M1. In fact,
it'll be M1X, it'll be M2, something like that.
When they mentioned the M1 processor for macOS, that's when I knew there wouldn't be any hardware announcements. Because everything that we're waiting for right now is going to have something other than the M1.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they specified that macOS works with M1 Max, or some feature worked with M1 Max, that was when I was like, okay, well, we're not getting any new Mac hardware, at least. And there's no other hardware that's due.
Yeah. So, I'm thinking fall.
Yeah, probably
at that fall. At that point, Apple will have enough chips manufactured. They've been able to stockpile enough displays and, you know, whatever else that they need to build up to be able to actually have something to ship on release day. So, this fall.
Probably. All right. So I know this is the thing that we were actually going to talk about. We're getting to it now, apparently, was whether or not the keynote was any good. Because we definitely saw some grousing out there.
Mm-hmm. I thought that the keynote was good, and at the same time didn't have tons of flashy announcements, which I think for a lot of people equates to it was a good keynote. And I'm actually glad that the announcements played out the way they did, because I wanted to see updates to the operating systems that, while sure they add some new features, they do a lot of refining.
But I thought there were many new features that were announced.
There were, but at the same time, they hit a lot of stuff that I felt was refining features that they already have. So it wasn't focusing just on new. I guess that's a better way to say it. It wasn't all new stuff. It was new stuff, but polishing and improving a lot of stuff that's already there. And to me, that was an important thing. I didn't want Apple to let things that were still rough around the edges stay that way. I wanted to see improvements. And we got that, and we got new features too. So I thought it was a win all the way around.
Yeah, I was thrilled through most of the keynote. I thought that the silly stuff was fun. Like, for instance, not actually Tim Cook and not actually Craig Federighi. I thought that was funny. Well done.
That was. Yep. Yep.
And I enjoyed. I thought the timing of the show was good. It was very fast paced. I thought that the flow of announcements was good, and in general, I there were lots of features that I thought were just absolutely terrific.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was pleased with the keynote. Yeah, I was entertained all the way through, and I liked the announcements that I was seeing. And there's some things where I was like, I'm not exactly excited about that, but that's okay. It shouldn't, as crazy as this sounds, it shouldn't be all about pleasing just me.
Right. Yeah. I am definitely okay with features that will appeal to other people.
Yeah. Because you're nice like that.
Yeah, I am. Right. Exactly. Tell me what your favorite stuff was.
My favorite stuff. Okay. Some of it was, I guess, kind of theme related, and the theme of taking all these devices that we have and giving us ways to integrate them with each other even more tightly. Mm. That was really cool. So like what is it? Universal Control.
Yes, Universal Control. That was one of my favorites.
Yeah. And I mean, as soon as I saw them drag a file from the iPad over to the Mac, I was like, holy crap, you just completely fixed a major pain point in my video making workflow.
Sure.
Because what I do right now I might record some video on my Mac, but I'm going to edit it on my iPad Pro. So that means the footage before it gets edited goes either into a Dropbox folder or to an iCloud files folder. And then after it's done uploading on the iPad, I download it all, and then I can start working with the content. Now I'm just going to drag it across, and it'll move much faster. So that one feature is going to save me, I think it's probably safe to say, literally hours every month.
So it's interesting you're focusing on that. I thought the most fantastic aspect of that was the seamlessly easy ability to control more than one device from the same keyboard and mouse.
You know,
especially going from Mac OS to iPad OS.
I loved that feature so much that, and I am not kidding you, I bought a Magic Trackpad 2 after the event.
Wow.
So I use my MacBook Pro in closed lid mode because I have this giant honking screen here. So when I'm using my iPad Pro sitting at my desk, that means that I have to have some other pointing device, you know, if I'm doing keyboard and mouse sort of stuff. And now having the trackpad right here addresses that. So one keyboard, Magic Trackpad sitting right here. I'm going to be able to have that whole, I'm working on multiple devices at the same time workflow work really, really well now. I am very excited about that feature too. I mean, so much so I bought a Magic Trackpad to have sitting here.
Okay, so the interesting thing about that to me is that I was very excited when I was watching it. I was like, oh, that's great. And then we were talking about it on TDO on Monday, and Kelly brought up a point that very much resonated with me, which was, this looks like a neat feature, but will I ever actually use it? And it sounds like you will. It sounds like that you for sure will.
I'm going to use the crap out of this. Seriously, the way I'm doing this kind of a workflow right now, to make it all work, I actually would go and set my iPad Pro at the dining room table, kitchen table, at the table with a keyboard and little Bluetooth mouse. And so I'd sit here at my Mac and work on stuff and then go into the other room and work on stuff there. And it's because it was a pain to deal with the whole multiple keyboard and mouse and all that stuff. And now I can just have everything sitting right here. And so I can be sitting in the comfortable work chair with the desk that's at the right height, using the keyboard that I want. And I'm just going to switch between the screens. And it's getting me much closer to a world where I'm not paying attention to which device I'm using. Right. It's just which function I'm doing.
That's all fair. That is all fair. All right. So that did you happen to have struck on one of my favorite new features right off the bat? So what was your next favorite?
It was actually the whole thing with digital legacy and being able to let family members share health information.
Okay.
Yeah. And so as I was watching all of that, what was going through my mind was, wow, my parents are getting older. They're both cancer survivors. They both have compromised immune systems because of their cancer treatments. And my dad's cancer, while it is controllable, it is not curable. So it is a given that this will eventually take his life. And my mom, her cancer it should have come back. And yet she's been in remission for several years. So I have these parents that are like medical miracles right now. And I love that part. But I also know that we're on a limited time frame here. So having a way to be able to address that inevitable part and prepare for that stuff now, I think is just wonderful. And it's something that's been missing from the Apple ecosystem for far too long. Yeah. And then the other part of being able to share some medical information, I mean, that's fantastic, because while I live near enough to my parents that I can go and help them, I don't live close enough that on the spur of the moment, I can go help them.
Right.
So having a way to be able to have access to some of this information, to be able to help stay on top of their health, I mean, that right there is worth the upgrade.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I can't actually add anything to that.
Okay, well then how about if I throw out another thing that I'm really pleased with?
Okay.
Which is the improvements to Find My.
Yes.
And see, your office manager agrees.
Yes, yes he does.
Yeah. The whole okay, part of that. No, I'll start with just the Find My specific part. Being able to lock your iPhone if it's lost or stolen, so that if it ends up getting like picked up and sold to someone else, even if you have wiped it, what they're going to be greeted with when they try and set up the iPhone is a notice that it's not their phone and it's been stolen. And I love that.
Yes.
I love that they've added in the ability to find a phone location, even if the battery's drained or the phone's turned off. And I want to learn more about how that works,
yes.
But I think that's very cool. Adding in a way to sort of like AirTags work, to be able to kind of locate where a lost AirPod is so that you can get within Bluetooth range and then really find it.
Yep.
That's really nice.
And have it actually play a sound now.
And have it play a sound. I know. Yes. Then the kick in the pants to Tile. Adding in the ability to have an AirTag tell you that you have left it behind. So, like, you won't forget and leave the house without your keys, sort of right. thing. And that's a feature that when Tile launched, that was just part of their thing. But that's behind their paid subscription now. So unless you're paying for that subscription, you don't get the feature. And now it's just part of Find My, yep. which I really liked. And is probably going to get me to switch completely off of Tile for AirTag, just because of that one feature.
Yeah, keep talking, because I got dogs barking.
Oh, okay. Let's see. So, I think that hits all of the.
Oh, come on, the man! Big privacy. Stuff from
Find Me that I liked.
Oh, from Find Me, yes. But how about yeah. all the privacy stuff? What I really enjoyed was how Apple took the concerns of Facebook and the advertising world and then said "F you."
Yes.
Apple like doubled and tripled down on its investment on its bet on privacy with
yes.
with this next round of OS updates. Internet Relay in particular was on Safari is fantastic. I'll let Dave talk about it where and when he wants to, but he was talking in the meeting this morning about hoping that Internet Relay comes to the podcast app as well. And I completely agree with him. It is a fantastic thing. I love Apple making it more possible for us to keep keep people from tracking us. It's a good thing.
I agree. And for those of you that don't understand what Internet Relay is, it's like a VPN. And so what Apple is doing is they're sending your internet requests to a server where you're anonymized and everything's encrypted, and then it passes on to like a second server and then goes on out encrypted to still. Do its thing. Still encrypted. Yeah. So at no point can Apple even figure out who you are or what IP address you're at.
Right.
And I think that's very cool. And I would love to see that come to even more of Apple's internet facing services. So yeah, let that come to the podcast app. And actually, since Mail is rendering HTML content in messages, I'm assuming it's using the same system so that it can grab all that stuff anonymously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Mail is doubling down on privacy as well.
Yes.
And I like the random email address stuff that you can make. And I've heard a lot of people say, yeah, well, I can already do the thing where I make an address and put the plus symbol in and then attach that to the front end of my current email address. Yes, you can. But this is super easy to do, and it's a truly random email address. Right. So it won't. Yeah. So it's not even like it ties back to your specific domain, because I can make an email address that's like spam plus Jeff at BriansBiggestFans.com. And they'll still have BriansBiggestFans.com.
Right.
So now they know what domain to start spamming.
Right. Right. And again, there's been this big effort. Facebook's efforts at pushing back against Apple's privacy stuff with the, you know, you're hurting small businesses. I mean, that was so laughable. And I'm really glad that that didn't seem to take root. But Apple took all the concerns and the complaints and the whining from the advertising industry and from Facebook, and just basically said, oh, okay, well, we're gonna amp it up a few notches.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, what Apple's doing, I think, is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And they're setting a bar that I would love to see other.
It's private relay, not internet relay.
Yeah, private relay. Thank you.
I misnamed it. I'm sorry about that.
I know you faked it and made it look like you misnamed it so that you appear as if you're human like the rest of us. So thank you for that. And I totally forgot what I was just going to say.
I'm sure it was great, though.
Oh, yeah. It was probably going to be the high point of the show, and now you've ruined it. Thanks.
I also, by the way, am looking forward to the changes in maps, at least in the screenshots that they showed. It looks great. So hoping that that ends up being great in use.
Yes. I have switched over to using maps as my exclusive mapping app. I've given up on Google Maps, and that's because for where I am, I actually get more accurate directions from Apple Maps.
Got it.
Yeah. So seeing the improvements that we've gotten over the last couple years to maps has been great. And what they announced during the keynote is really awesome.
Yeah. Well, it just goes to show that Eric Schmidt was right when he said that Apple should just leave maps to Google because it's really hard.
Right. Well, I mean, yes, it is really hard, but Apple's got the resources to just keep plugging away at it. And they've made a really good product. On a side note, I checked around my place in what's Apple's version of Street View? I forgot what they call it, but anyhow,
sure.
Apple's version of Street View, because I wanted to see what my place looked like, because I've seen the Apple Maps cars drive by a couple times. Mm-hmm. And they drove down the where my car is parked, and my car is right there, and it looks so much nicer than what you see in Google Street View.
Nice.
Also, it was really funny to see that in addition to blurring out the license plate on my car, thank you for that, Apple, the Thule box on top of my car, you can see the Thule logo on the back, and you can clearly read Thule, but it's also on the side. They blurred out on the side the Thule word.
That is interesting. I'm sorry. Yeah. You know, it's all about me, right?
It is all about you. You're looking up your place now, aren't you?
I am. And two houses down from my place, apparently Apple passed by on a day with a couch and two mattresses out on the street. It's really classy. But even in the current version of Maps, the Street View is so much more fluid than Google's.
Yeah, it is. I'm very pleased with Maps, and I'm looking forward to when the changes are finally available to me. And I know it takes months because, you know, I live in the Denver Boulder area, so it'll take a while.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Let's see. There's so many other interesting things. Oh, I thought the whole thing with bringing Siri to third-party hardware was fascinating.
That was a big surprise.
Very big surprise. Now, it does require that you have a HomePod mini. I presume it'll work with a HomePod as well. Of course, Apple didn't mention HomePod because you don't mention the dead when you work for Apple. But I thought it was fascinating that it did not include Apple TV, because Apple TV is a HomeKit bridge as well.
Yeah, but it may, probably should. And if anything, this announcement makes Apple killing the HomePod make more sense, in that HomePod Mini is not a great home entertainment speaker.
It's a great utility speaker.
It's fine for the kitchen. It's fine for the kitchen and maybe your like washing machine room or something. But I don't want it to be my main music delivery vehicle, and I don't want it to be my main TV vehicle I used two HomePods for my TV.
Right.
And I enjoy that. It is not as good as a proper audio system with the soundbar, maybe a subwoofer, right? But it's been pretty good for me for my current situation, and that's great. The replacing, like if my HomePods broke, I would not replace those with HomePod minis. That's insane. And so now I don't have, like I don't have, you know, I would be moving to some other speaker system, and I wouldn't have Siri. Well, maybe I will be able to have Siri. And that makes killing the HomePod make more sense to me.
Yeah. It makes Apple's smart speaker platform much more accessible. And yet I still find it odd that even in the fine print about that feature, it specifically says HomePod Mini but does not say Apple TV.
Let's hope that changes. It should change.
I hope so.
It should. Not from the standpoint of I'm saying that it will, but the other version of should.
And you're right. It should be.
I think it needs to.
As well. Yes, it definitely needs to. Yeah. So I've just been hitting you left and right with stuff that I like. I'm going to give you one I don't like, which is the new tabs in Safari. And when I look at that, all I can think is no one at Apple is actually really using Safari because the whole horizontal tab user interface thing for browsers, I think is horrible just in general. And the way they streamlined it and made the tabs smaller, it's I'm finding it to be much less usable. They've taken a bad idea and made it worse.
You've installed the beta?
I've installed the beta on my 10-inch iPad Pro.
Yeah.
And holy crap, I love the window tray that goes along with that whole interface. I mean, that's really cool. The tabs themselves. Yeah.
Okay.
Those tabs are bad. And it works the same in Monterey.
All right. Hold that thought. Let me tell you about LinkedIn Jobs.
Oh, yes, please.
Today, many small business owners are busier than ever because they are focused on managing and growing their businesses. They can't always spend the time they wish that they could on recruiting. And that's why LinkedIn Jobs has made it easier to find and hire the best candidates for free. This is where I like to jump straight to the thing that I like the most about LinkedIn Jobs, which is the interface that they have for managing and viewing and otherwise checking out the candidates that you have for your job postings and managing your job postings themselves. They make it really, really easy to organize and execute this process of finding someone for a job. And that can be killer for those of us who have small businesses who need to hire. You can get started by posting your job for free to reach LinkedIn's network of 740 million professionals. Fill out targeted screening questions to get your role in front of the most qualified candidates with the experience, skills, and motivation you need. And then use those simple tools that I mentioned to filter and prioritize the top candidates that you'd like to interview. The interface makes it easy. The interface makes it possible for you to manage this entire process in ways that you otherwise, frankly, couldn't. LinkedIn Jobs will help you hire the right person for your role, and your first job post is free just because you're listening to the Apple Context Machine. Just visit linkedin.com/ACM. Again, that's linkedin.com/ACM to post your first job for free. As always, terms and conditions apply. Okay, we were talking about tabs, and I wanted to get in our spot for LinkedIn Jobs. You haven't even gotten to the part that's the weirdest to me, which is putting the tabs on the same line as your URL field, which
is really weird.
It makes sense from the standpoint of wanting to use less vertical space, but it gives you it's taking up a lot of room for your tabs. Like I'm a big tab user, and I'm looking at Safari right now. I've got Windows open. There's six tabs. There's a whole bunch of windows open. Here's a window with close to 20 tabs. I mean, like, how is that going to work when a big part of my tabs space is being occupied by something else, which is the URL field?
You're going to be doing a lot more left and right swiping in that bar because.
Well, what about on your Mac?
Gesture to swipe, or I think there's little arrows at the end. So you click and see more.
I am not an animal, so I use a proper mouse.
Mm-hmm.
So none of the swiping nonsense for me on my Mac. I'm kidding. I know lots of people much prefer a trackpad. It's a curious design decision, and I like the way the interface changes looked during the keynote.
But I didn't even like that.
I did, and that's certainly subjective. So there's probably not a right or wrong. For whether or not that's good, but I don't understand. I do not understand combining the URL field and your tab interface in the same line. That just doesn't make sense to me.
It looks really weird to me. And like if I'm two tabs in and I'm seeing the tabs for the first two just sitting there off to the left of the URL field, mm-hmm. It just looks really weird. And yes, it's new, so of course it doesn't look right to me, but it looks
and you're really still talking weird. iPad OS.
Yeah, on iPad OS.
Yeah, I'm fixating on doing it on my Mac because that's where I utilize tabs the most.
Well, I just haven't had time to install Monterey on my external drive yet. So I am looking forward to seeing it there, but the interface is basically the same, and it's just weird. I was hoping that when Apple announced, was it last year or year before, that they were opening up extensions for Safari so that it would be much easier for developers to bring their extensions to the browser. Mm-hmm. I was hoping that when Rakona said, yes, we're working on a Safari extension, that it would have come out by now. They're still saying, yeah, they're working on it. But, I mean, at least that would give me the vertical tab manager, which makes a lot more sense. And I would be able to install that and then use Safari as my primary browser. Because right now I'm using... what is it? Edge with Rakona installed so that I can have a browser that fits everything together that I need. I miss not Rakona being able to use Safari. Rakona is an extension for Chromium browsers and Firefox that adds tab management for you. Ah. So you can group tabs, which you can now do in Safari, but it also gives you a vertical tab list on the left side of your browser window. So while you still have the tabs across the top, on the left, you can actually see which tabs are what, because you can actually read what the name of the page is. Mm. So it's much easier to work with a lot of tabs, and it also syncs between your computers. So since we'll be able to do extensions in mobile Safari,
yeah,
which is awesome. Once that plugin comes out, then I can have a proper unified tab view across all my devices that works the way I want. I'm looking forward to that.
Fair enough. All right. Well, let's move along to our last topic, which is I'm wondering if you detected any sort of thematic directions that Apple is. I don't think. Anyway, something that Apple is showing us without necessarily telling us.
There are two things that I saw Apple showing us the first one, they were kind of telling us, but they didn't come straight out and say, this is exactly what we're doing. And that's the whole thing that we saw coming out of Universal Control, which is they're unifying the Apple platform. And I don't mean that in we have Mac OS running on an iPad or iPad OS running on a Mac sort of thing, but like all of our devices start working together so seamlessly that you can pick and choose what works best where, and then it doesn't matter because you've just got all this stuff and you're just using whichever device seamlessly performs a specific task the best.
All of which speaks to Apple's position on the toaster fridge going back to when Steve was still alive.
Which is ironic, but if you make the toaster fridge right, and I think that's what Apple's trying to do, then great.
I don't think they're making a toaster fridge. I think that they're allowing each device to be true to itself. That they've stuck right. with that line.
Oh, I see what you're saying. And I was thinking they're making a toaster fridge platform because you can have everything just all clumped together.
Well, they're making a kitchen platform.
There we go. That's better. Yeah, they're making an integrated kitchen platform, not a toaster fridge. Got it. Yes, you're right. Yeah, and I love it. I'm very excited for this, and I hope that we get to see more of this at WWDC next year. I feel like Sidecar was step one, Universal Control is step two, and I can't wait to see what step three is.
Step three or maybe step four is going to be the iPhone being our data and processor, and the way we access that data and processor depending on the task that we're doing. So we're sitting at a desk, we've got a display. The display grabs your data and processor from your iPhone, and now you're working like you would have worked with a desktop computer back when there were desktop computers. And when you're on the go, you've got your data and processor on your phone, just like you do now. And if you're sitting on the couch and you've got a different way of viewing your data and processor, similar to, like, say, an iPad, that display will grab the information that's on your iPhone. But that to me is when Phil Schiller talked about the iPhone having a 50-year future, which he said 2 or 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now, time does weird things to one's memory. That is the future that I believe he was referencing.
And that's very exciting.
There will be less of an emphasis on the operating system and separate devices, and more of an emphasis on simply accessing both the data and the processing power that we carry around with us.
I love this idea, and I would love to see that as part of the end goal. I equate it to the Duo Dock. So for those of you that are too young to remember, there was a time when Apple sold a PowerBook, which predates the MacBook, that would slide into the front of this box that sits on your desk. And so it would switch from being a laptop to a desktop computer. And it had more functionality and more power when it was in its dock. And it was great because you had a desktop experience and a laptop experience all in one. And this seems like the natural progression of that. You buy an iPhone and it's like, that's it. That's your Nexus. And everything else just works with it depending on what your task is.
Yeah. And, to that end, Siri doing all voice processing locally, mm-hmm, is, first of all, huge. That may actually be my very favorite feature that was announced.
That one got an audible whoa for me when they announced that.
Yeah, it is huge. It's huge from a privacy standpoint. It is huge from a just a speed standpoint, not having to go to Apple servers and come back with the information needed from the processing. These things are huge, but it is also a tiny part of the step towards a future where we have one device, and it's simply how we access that device that changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's just awesome. And I would love to be at a point where my entire computing world fits in my pocket, and then it just kind of morphs depending on how and where I'm using it. That'll be amazing.
Now, that's not something I think is going to happen next year. And maybe not 10 years from now, maybe not 20 years from now. But I do think that it will happen. And I think that you know, Apple is the kind of company that would be all too happy to kill its own Mac product line and replace it with, you know, an iPhone and a display, where the display is accessing your iPhone data and processor. Mm-hmm. And I think that Apple would be happy to make that transition.
Well, I mean, at that point, Apple could do what I have visualized, which is sell you a laptop that has an empty space the size of an iPhone. And you lift up the lid, you set your iPhone in that space, and it's right in front of the keyboard where a trackpad would go. And now you have your trackpad because of the touch surface on the iPhone, and the laptop becomes the display and external keyboard for your phone, and gives you external ports, and of course has a battery, so it can run the display and charge your phone at the same time. And there's a lot Apple can do.
I don't even think we need to go. I don't think we need to go that route. I think that the keyboard and display will become the product. Be it the iPad kind of display, or be it the laptop kind of display with the keyboard, or be it the desktop kind of display with the keyboard. I don't even think you need the slot where the iPhone fits. All that should be able to be done wirelessly. But at that point, can't do it today, but at that point.
Yeah. I can see that. And of course, it makes sense. Why should you have to take your iPhone out of your pocket or bag to be able to do all those other things? You should be able to just grab your keyboard and display and start working.
Yeah, and really, it shouldn't even need to be my keyboard and display. It should be the keyboard and display that's handy.
Yeah.
So take that.
I like that. That would be cool. Of course, I don't want to use other people's keyboards anymore.
Well, no, I get that. But like, I guess my point is that the input devices and visual devices don't need to be personalized. They could be personalized, but they don't need to be personalized. Like, I mean, like we at that point, we don't need ATMs. Our phone becomes our ATM, right?
Yeah. And
we don't need, we don't need, there's a whole lot of standalone devices that we take for granted currently that would be completely obviated and made redundant by input and visual input and I need a better what's an input device is like your keyboard and mouse and tripod. What would a display be at that point? I keep calling it a visual device, but there's got to be a better input and output device, right?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, definitely pedantic. With your input and the input and output device that you're choosing to interface with your data in your pocket should become the thing. And at some point we will have holographic displays that are projecting our output. Mm-hmm. Like we don't need a slab of glass because we've got some kind of projecting device that is making like a portable output device for wherever we go. And of course, then at some point we'll have the implants in our brains where the stuff can be projected onto our visual cortex.
And then next step, we get to all climb aboard the by and large spaceship and fly away and sit in our entertainment couches, just like in WALL-E, and it'll be glorious. It'll be
glorious, yes.
I mean, but okay. So I'm making fun, but the concept that you're presenting, it's I think it's a natural progression of the technology.
And it's the only with what we know today and what we see today, it is the thing that makes the most sense to me when I think back to Phil Schiller saying that the iPhone has a place for the next 50 years.
Yeah, and that statement, I think, is getting more exciting now, mm-hmm. because we're starting to see how all these pieces are coming together.
Yep. Yeah, good stuff. All right, Jeff, unfortunately, we are out of time. I would like to let me do this one thing. We do like and that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, the basis by Boom. Recorded just for TMO. And Jeff, thank you very much for being here, man. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for inviting me back on. I seriously always have an absolute blast when we get to hang out and do this.
Same. And I'd also like to thank LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring this week's episode. And remember that LinkedIn Jobs will help you hire the right person for your role. And your first job post is free. All you have to do is visit LinkedIn.com/ACM. That's LinkedIn.com/ACM to post your first job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. And again, Jeff, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
I absolutely loved being here. Seriously. Let's do it again sometime.
Probably really soon.